pop in here for a couple minutes, I can say hello to you. Mr. Wonstadt.
Dave Wonstadt.
Shane, wake up.
NFL head coach for 11 years.
The Bears came in here and Dave Wonstadt. There's a happy group of overachievers that have been well coached.
College football national champion.
Dave Wonstadt, one of my, you know, really idols.
Super Bowl champion.
But here's the thing. I'm enthusiastic, okay? Yeah. Because...
I like that. Let's get some shirts. Yeah. I'm enthusiastic.
Football analyst for NBC Sports and the Marquee Network.
Ryan Bates with the arthritic shoulder condition. That's what Paul Papp's mother has. And she's not available to dress.
Not available. But, Coach, she's a grinder. She would go in there and pass block for you.
I know she would.
Coach, didn't you try to redshirt Paul's mom like Aaron Donald?
No, not Paul's mom.
There was one room with the light on at Pitt.
That's right.
It was Paulie's mom in the weight room.
Hey, Paul, these guys, it's tough to get any, you can see, it's tough to get any serious work done here, but
Form is something tall and strong, make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only 12:30, but I don't care.
You don't care.
I don't care.
It's 5:00 somewhere. Oh, boy.
Dave Wonstadt is here. He is here in studio with us. This is delightful. This is, look, it's great to be able to say it to him. And, you know, he and I feel like, have formed quite a bond over the last few years. I used to be the host of the Dave Wonstadt Show on NBC Sports Chicago, and I feel like my knowledge of the game took a leap forward because I got the chance to work with Coach, and he worked with me on stuff. Like, we'd get in front of the monitor, and he'd be like, "Lawrence, come over here." All right, you're this guy, and I'm this guy. And then you know, you push me around the studio, and you learn football that way.
A picture's worth a thousand words.
You're right.
It's a visual learner.
That's the way you guys do it. Absolutely.
So this is a treat to be a part of this, what you guys did on the Parkins and Spiegel show.
Well, this is super. I mean, Mitch Rosen put this thing together, and I'm fired up. Because I didn't know what direction it was going to go.
Neither did we, Coach.
This is a favorite time of the week for me, and... So I'm excited. I'm truly excited about it.
Moving. Yeah, we love that you love coming in here, and it matters. So
You know who else loves when I come in here? Jan.
Jan.
I told her. I said, you know what? You don't. I said I forgot about dinner, and Shane said he's bringing food in. So Shane, thank you.
Thank Highline Pizza, Dave. You've been there. You were there for the opening night.
I think it was as good or better tonight, maybe, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that was the time that you told the entire air that you had dinner with the afternoon crew, but just with Pat Manley.
Right, you went out with everybody, but you only had dinner with Pat Manley. Yeah.
And Dave, your picture is on the flyer. I think speaks as a flyer.
No, I have it up right now. For the people on Twitch so that they can see Dave. Dave's picture there on the
Are you kidding
the
me?
Flyer. Isn't how great is that?
I'll give you one to bring home. I'm sure Jan's going to want that.
Is that Prime, right, Dave?
Coach, what's your name, image, and likeness situation over there?
That was the first thought that went into my mind.
I know. Verbally, they said $100,000, but you can't really hold them to that if it's just verbal.
Absolutely.
That flyer's just for us, I promise. They're not putting it out.
Hey, and then we got a little red wine to go with it.
And they provided that as well, Highline did.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you, Highline.
I'm going to go with a little Buffalo Trace today. That's what I'm going to go with.
You guys, enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I just thought the wine with the pizza would be pretty tasty.
I think it's a lovely, lovely choice by you, Coach. We got a lot to get to.
Let's do it.
So much football from that game, forward. And we have a little bit of Mercedes Lewis we want to play for you. But first, let's go to the most egregious moment in that game that we haven't had a chance to talk to you about. 70 yards... 7 minutes.
Yep.
13 plays.
Yep.
You go down, you get six, and they haven't decided whether they're going for one or going for two, and then you got to burn a timeout. How disorganized is that? What do we take from that for a coaching staff observance?
Well, it's a little bit confusing because I know that they have great people keeping track of all that stuff. I mean, back in the day, I used to have an assistant coach do it. You know, Mike Shula did it when I was here. Joel Collier, I always had an assistant coach. He kept the timeout situation, and he would keep the two-point thing. And it's just a chart. Come on. This is not getting on a computer and trying to figure something out. You look at it. But what would happen is Whenever I told him, I says, I want to know what the situation is if we're driving and we cross the 50. So once we would cross the 50, Mike Shula, for example, here at the Bears, Mike was my tight end coach. He would say, Coach, the chart says go for two. And so if we scored, I just put two fingers up and we went for two. I mean, you know, it's not a big deal. You're anticipating that. You don't have to tell the players that because they, you know, right away, one way or another, I mean, it's kick it one. I mean, it's but you know that in advance. And now if the head coach for some reason doesn't want to go for two and the chart and the situation says because it's early in the game. A lot of, you know, go in college and you learn the rule that, hey, don't go for two unless it's the fourth quarter, you know, or you're really far behind. Kick the extra point. So if there was some indecision, but even so, there was plenty of time, plenty of plays. I don't know what happened. I'd love to get the inside on that because that was that was not good. Absolutely.
Because that's like an automatic. It's five. Right. You know, what it is.
And the situation was a no-brainer. Yeah, you want to take it to a one-score game, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
So, yeah. No,
disappointing, though. Yeah.
It looks bad on that coaching staff. And then fourth and goal. What is this? What's the identity of this offense? What would you be calling if it's fourth and goal for you if you're head coach of this offense with that personnel?
You know, it's funny. I'm sitting over at Marquee where I'm going to do a little post game, and they get in that situation, and they all turn to me and says, Coach, what play are you calling? I said, what play am I calling? I'm kicking the field goal. Are you kidding me? The most important thing in my mind
is get points.
Before the half, you want to get momentum. Okay? You're on the road. You're not at home. You're on the road. You want to get momentum and make it 7-3. It's early. Let's go to work. You know, and it's obvious to me when you call that play. You know, I didn't like to play just from my college background. We get inside the 20. What happens is, and Lawrence, you'll, and Spiggs, you know, I know Lawrence, well, I probably used him as a safety at one point or another demonstrating. But
everything condenses.
Spiggs, you hear what the man said?
Yeah.
Okay, so now it's even more so when you're at the 10, you know, because there's not as much ground to cover. So that means your linebackers now are tighter to the line of scrimmage. Your safeties are tight. Everything tightens up. Okay. But when you're on the, 4-yard line or 1-yard line, whatever they were on.
They were at the one-yard
line, guys. I never like pitching the ball only for the fact that, boy, turnovers down there. Guys can get on you so quick because it's so condensed and hit you, and the ball goes on the ground. So we never pitched the ball in college when we did the option if we were inside the 20. We just didn't like that play. But put that aside. Forget about what I like. You know what it told me? The head coach – Flew says we're going to go for it, and Waldron, the offensive coordinator, maybe says something to the line coach or the running back coach, maybe not. I don't know how they work at all, and he calls that play. That tells me they don't have confidence in hitting these guys in the mouth, knocking them off the ball, and making a yard. That's what that play told me.
See, that's incredibly true. I think that's absolutely right. They don't have the confidence. So do you still try and do it against a bad run defense when, you know, if you're not
Coach,
confident, should you still try and do it?
You put Komet in the backfield, you put Mercedes in and a tight end, and you line up in the eye, and you just run that thing and give the ball to Herbert. That's who I would give it to. I mean, I love DeAndre Swift. Coach, he's a third down back, in my opinion.
Oof.
He's not a first and second down back. He's not going to run up in there between the tackles. This is just my opinion now. No, you know, I mean, it's I've been around a few backs, you know, Ricky. I played with Tony Dorsett, you know, coached Ricky Williams, Emmett Smith, LeSean McCoy. So I've been around some backs, okay? And I just don't like how he runs between the tackles. Throw him a screen, get him out on the edge, run him on sweep. I love the guy. Guy's dangerous with the ball in his hands. You're going to run the insides. And I charted the plays when they were running. In the first quarter, they ran a toss, they ran a lead, they ran a belly. They ran four, I might have had five different running plays looking for something. And here's what happens. When you get hit in the mouth or make 2 yards, you can't give up on it, guys. You can't give up on it. Come back and run it again. You know what I mean? Or don't give up on the run game. And it was just kind of, in my mind, it was Rolodex through the runs. Nothing works, so let's go from there.
That's the best description we've had all week, Lawrence, of what I've been trying to put my finger on in terms of the running game. Just Rolodexing through the different runs. Doesn't look like anything's connected to itself.
But you're not going to get a 8-yard run, for Spiggs, if you get two. So let's line up and run again.
Do it again. Well, that's the thing. Nothing seems like, oh, look, we found something. Let's do it again. He's just going to the next cute thing. Is that offensive coordinator mindset of look how smart I am?
No, I don't think that's the case.
What is it,
I think it's lack of confidence. I think, you know, some guys will stay with it, and some guys get impatient, and they think in their minds that they've got other ways to score. Obviously, they're trying to score, but I don't know. I mean,
it's a lack of confidence.
You know, all I know is you're running for 2 yards and you're running for 2 yards, and they, the fans might be booing, but you put Caleb Williams in 3rd-and-5. He's a lot more comfortable. Okay, 3rd-and-6. He's a lot more comfortable, and your odds of converting are a lot better, guys, than they are in 3rd-and-8 or 3rd-and-9.
Coach, how do you develop the toughness of short yardage success? What are the things that, and I know that we're in a way different world than when you were coaching, but there's part of me, and this goes back a little ways. I brought it up to Spiegs earlier this week. Some of it is personnel. I personally, and this is my thing, I feel like Darnell Wright should be next to Tevin Jenkins. They don't want to do that. Okay, fine. But you can do that. You can overload a line. You can move a guy over depending on whatever it is that you're going to call. I double dog dare you to stop it. We're gonna telegraph. We're gonna move our left guard over, and we dare you to stop it. We're telling you where the ball is. I need some of that, and I want to know how does that get developed.
Well, with a double dog, it might be might be tough to him. No, what the hell does that mean? You gotta explain it.
Double dog dare you? What, could dare you?
Is that something you said in a playground or something?
Yeah, if I would dare Lawrence, he would up the ante.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And go
a
to
double
a,
dog dare.
We go, well, you go to a double dare.
And then I double dog dare.
And then okay. You got nowhere to go from okay. there. Okay. Then you're sticking your tongue onto the freezer pole.
All right.
No on. Matter what.
Hold on. Okay. I got it. But
see,
I
we whiteboard stuff for coach sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know if that would be a double dog, okay?
Maybe it's just a dare.
Yeah, it might be a dare. But
how can you develop that toughness?
Because these guys have been working at one spot with one hand on the ground, and their pass sets are a certain way, and they hit with their hands a certain way. There's a lot of fundamental work. Now, keep this in mind. They have 14 practices. This is the NFL's new rule for our listeners that aren't aware. You can have 14 practices during the NFL season in full pads, okay?
So not even one a week.
You can have, but you here's. But then the second part of that is you got to use 11 of them in the first 11 weeks, okay? And then after that, you've got
six more weeks.
For 6 weeks, okay? If I'm Matt Eberflus, I am in full-ass pads, okay? And I am out there this week to double doggy or whatever you said, double dare. I am out there, and I'm gonna double dog them this week in practice. I'm putting full pads on, and I'm going out there and I'm gonna get the offensive script, and I'm gonna say, I don't know, it's not my job to pick the runs. Okay, you pick the runs. That's your job as an offensive coordinator and an offensive line coach, running backs. But if we got 20 plays, I want 10 or 12 of these plays being runs. Okay, and 8 maybe 10. Being passes this week. And this is a point of emphasis, and we are going to go out there, and we're not tackling to the ground, but it is full speed inside run with the blocking and the backs running. And that's what I would do, okay, to get their attention and let them know. And you know what? They're going to have a tough time because you don't run the ball on our defense. Our defense is excellent against the run, one of the best in the NFL. So it would be tough duty, but I wouldn't care. You let's go.
How often would you go in to the offensive line rooms? How often would you go in with the offensive coordinator and address the offense as a whole? And did it vary based on how the team was doing, how the offense was doing?
Not often, but after last week's game, after rushing for 50 yards, when a team gave up 250 to two of their three opponents, I'd be damn, that'd be my first stop. First stop. Absolutely. And it, it's just, you know, and you know, hey, I'm a little bit, that's just my mentality with doing things. And, you know, it got me fired a few places because people thought I was too conservative, but we were going to run the damn football and take some pressure off our quarterback. And the offensive linemen love to run the ball, guys. I mean, they really do. They don't want to be setting up for a pass in space against Will Anderson Jr. I mean, that's no fun. Mm. But yeah. Get your hand in the dirt and come off and hit him in the mouth. That's what's fun.
It sounds fun.
He's right.
Yeah, right? He's definitely right. All right, so look, we got to play this for you. This was earlier today from Mercedes Lewis talking to assembled media at his locker. And he talked about a bunch of stuff, which is a fascinating bit of tape. If anybody's out there didn't hear the whole segment, use the rewind feature later if you want. Go back and check out the whole segment with Mark Grody where we play the whole thing at the top of the 4 o'clock hour. But Mercedes Lewis talking about advice that he would have for Shane Waldron, perhaps. The offensive coordinator, Mercedes, is a 40-year-old grown man, was talking about that.
I mean, without pointing out certain people, I think there's this game, man, it's you either expose others or you get exposed, right? And like I said, you don't have the room to not be doing your thing, right? Like when you guys see a great catch, that took all 11 for that to happen. When you see a touchdown, it takes all 11 to see that happen. And I think that's what it's about, is just making sure that we're all on the same page, where we're supposed to be doing what we're supposed to be doing. And that's really it. I mean, it's a complimentary sport. This is why you love it. It's always a constant grind to find that balance, and that's what we're focused on now.
Mercedes, so what was the message you wanted to get across to Shane when you guys met with him as a leadership group?
Well, I think mainly just continue to be vocal about the things that he sees and don't feel like you can't point guys out, you know, from the oldest guy in the room, being me, to the youngest guy. Like, don't feel like you can't, you know, coaches. I want to be coached. I want to be great.
Man.
Dave, what do you hear there when you hear Mercedes talking about that?
It tells me I'm giving him a scholarship. You know? Oh, sorry.
You already recruited him, coach.
No, he's already in the league. I love that. And before the game last week, I was saying this is a Mercedes Lewis game. You know what I mean? And it's the same thing this week. Him and Komet. And they got that going early. What do I think he's saying?
I mean, he's, because we heard the longer version, like what do you have when you're a head coach? If you got an offensive coordinator who's not telling people when they've made mistakes.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I don't think that's what he was saying. I think how you say it might have something to do with it, you know? I mean, DeAndre, when we run lead up inside or we run belly, if you don't push it up in that thing, then you can't play, son. You know, that's it. And you got to do this stuff when you hit a little bit of a crisis like the Bears did after last week, man. This is when you have team, not just I have a team meeting, but then I'm watching this tape with offense and defense. And let me tell you guys something. Two things that motivate and professional players. We're talking football now. You know what it is? Money and peer pressure. That's the two biggest motivators for professional athletes. So if I'm watching that tape and I'm looking at that tape, and some, whether it be effort or whether it be mental mistakes or whether it be toughness or whatever it is, and I point that and I get out of my chair and I say, this is not what we want. This is not acceptable. Does everybody understand that? And I don't have to point the guy out. Does everybody understand that this is not what we're trying to get done here? I'll tell you what, players hate that, guys. You know, players hate that. And I put normally a few plays out every week with the whole group, but I would get the whole damn group in there after last week's game, and I would go through every one of those plays. I mean, you know, on the touchdown run to Adunze, Mercedes is in there. I loved it. It was a two-man route, okay? Mercedes was in there blocking at the tight end, and Komet was in there at the wing. And they double-teamed all down guys. Everybody got two guys. So then on the fumble, strip fumble at the end that they recover, they had the same two guys in there, and the pass rusher runs all the way around Cole.
Lot two.
And sacks the damn passer. And we had two. And, you know, I mean, Mercedes couldn't do anything because he was all the way outside. But I'm asking, Cole, what the hell are you doing? You got to block that guy. I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't want to get too worked up here. But that's what I'm talking about. And I'm saying in a positive way, Cole Kmet, to me, I mean, he's never coming off the field in my style of offense. You know that. Mm-hmm. And, but times are different, and I get that.
He pointed a thumb on that play big time.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, you got to – that's what, to me, accountability is. Just showing a film saying we got two guys to block this cat, and he makes a sack and causes a fumble? Come on.
You're upset, and I like it. I like that you're sharing with people because it goes against your sensibilities as a football coach. We want to talk more about this, and we want to get your thoughts on Caleb Williams as well and how he played. Dave is going to have another sip of the red wine.
I drink this, yeah. I'm walking, so any listeners out there, don't worry. Don't be saying Coach is having a glass of wine and getting in his car.
Also, if you're walking downtown, you see a football coach walking by, Bears coach.
I'm going to be ready. If somebody says, I've gotten yelled at before because of a Bears loss. Trust me. I'll be ready tonight.
Which one? From like 96?
From a week ago.
Yeah. Oh, okay, my bad.
See, 7 o'clock in the morning.
Because I had a game I wanted to
bring
up.
That's what I mean, though. I think the whole city feels like Dave does. I think a lot of people thought this would look different than what it does, and it doesn't look right, and Dave knows it. And he's willing to
and
share.
They know what I'm all in on the Bears. Flus, and I mean, I want all these guys to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's harder. It's harder when you give a crap like you do.
Yes.
Yes. So we'll continue to talk with Coach after a quick timeout. Spiegel and Holmes, Dave Wannstedt in studio on the Score.
Dave Wannstedt.
And I'm always available unless I'm doing something.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
You're full of it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Like double dog dare you.
Now it was serious. A double dog dare. What else was left but a triple dare you? And finally, the coup de grace of all dares, the sinister triple dog dare.
I triple dog dare you!
Little stones. Bring it on.
I got to say real quick, thinking of our dear friend Lynn Bramer, who called this the greatest song in the history of rock and roll, this one right here, and whose Lynn's Bins were greatly influenced by Gene Shepherd, whose stories led to that movie, A Christmas Story. So, Lynn Bramer, you are here with us in spirit right now.
Now, we miss Lynn every day.
Yep.
Every single day. It's a nice tribute, Speaks.
It just happened, man. Sometimes Lynn is in the room, you know what I mean?
As Dave said during the break, God works in mysterious ways.
You guys were talking about that?
Yeah. Like you gotta understand.
Not about that, but something else.
You're talking about God working in mysterious ways.
You gotta understand. I have so much respect for this man. Like, so much. Trust.
Double dog trust?
Double dog trust.
It better not be single dog trust.
No.
I would be highly disappointed, Lawrence, if it was just single dog.
Someday you'll get the triple dog trust.
Okay, I'm working on it. I am
right there, though.
Keep fighting, Coach.
One more week.
I'm going to keep fighting.
One more week.
Absolutely.
How did you think Caleb played?
You know what? I thought he played okay. I would give him a C+. I don't get hung up on the yards.
Neither do I.
Okay? I get hung up on touchdowns and interceptions. And when you throw, you know, a couple – overall for the year, I think the guy's making progress. Absolutely. Is he going to be a great player? Absolutely. I still believe that. I'm all for Caleb Williams, but, you know, the guy's got four interceptions and only two touchdowns. I mean, that's completely backwards. You should be 2-1 touchdowns to interceptions. And
he's never been an interception guy either. Like, five was the career high.
I know. It's been a fumble
and
guy.
And it's been, you know why? Pressure. And he's still making the throws off his back foot, you know, some decisions. The one he threw to Odunze, I mean, he said he was one-on-one. Get the ball to DJ Moore. What's happened to DJ Moore? The guy is the best player maybe on our team, him and Sweat. DJ Moore's got to come out of every game somehow, some way, in my opinion, you know, catching 7-8 passes or more. He really does. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just, you know, partial a little bit to DJ, but he makes plays at everything he does. So, but no, Caleb, here's the problem with Caleb. You know how many passes Tom Brady averaged a game in his whole career?
The entire career.
Yeah. How many passes a game? 34 passes.
I was going to say like 29.
Yeah, 34 passes a game. And we got our rookie thrown it 52 times. I mean, come on, guys. And it wasn't a blowout game. Now, if you told me it was 20-21 nothing, I say, well, yeah, we got to throw it to score some points. But
mostly a one possession game.
Thank you. Absolutely. That made no sense to me. And that's not giving him, in my mind, a fair chance. You know, I mean, I know I'm repeating myself a little bit, but I was there when Tom Brady started his career. His first road game ever was against my Dolphins team in Miami. And the guy threw for 80 yards, you know, and I don't know if he had, I don't think he had an interception.
Yeah.
Threw for 80 yards, and we beat him pretty good. And that was the end of it. From then on out, the guy just got better and better and better. But my point was, you know what they did with them? They were running the ball. They were playing screens, high percentage passes, until he gets his confidence, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, we hit on Ben Roethlisberger as another example of a guy who was allowed to break in with a running game and eventually turned into a high-volume and high-efficiency passer. Yeah.
Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm. There's been a bunch of them. These Rams, by the way, that defense is dead last in yards allowed, 27th in passing yards, 28th in rushing yards. But they're excited to get the Bears and their rushing offense. So it could be an ugly, ugly game. I hope not. I hope not, Coach.
It's going to be an ugly game for the Bears. Bears are going to win this one big.
Think so?
I do.
They're going to win it big?
I'm on it. I'm all over this one.
Is that one of your picks?
It's one of my picks.
All right, well, hang on. Before we get to your picks, caller 6 to 312-591-6700 wins a $200 gift card to Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo. That's right now. Caller 6, you hop on in.
Hey, real quick, I just remembered that's not the contest line. That's on me. I put that in your copy. 312-540-0670. I'm remembering an older day of the score. My bad, Speed.
That first number was Shane's. Just disregard that.
So, Shane, throw it out there one more time.
312-540-0670. That's my bad. On me. Hand up. Point the thumb.
Caller 6 to that number.
312-540-0670.
Yep. Caller 6 to the other line gets a big punch in the face.
That's the mood we're in. Hey, and you know what?
Can I talk football here for a minute?
The Four Winds Forecast with
really?
Dave Wannstedt.
Put your mouthpiece in, because here we go.
Presented by Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo and South Bend.
Okay, here we go. All right, this is going to be a good week for us here, okay? Get all over these picks. All right, give the Rams 3. Give them whatever you want to give them. I'm taking the Bears and giving them 3, okay? I'm taking the Jets. This is a revenge game. Nathan Hackett, the offensive coordinator, Aaron Rodgers' best buddy, they're playing Denver in New York. Get on the Jets. I like Jacksonville is getting 6.5 points, guys. I'll tell you what, I'm on Jacksonville against Houston. I like the points right there in Jacksonville, and Cincinnati's not going to lose 4 in a row. So I'm giving up 4 points with the Bengals against Carolina, and I am all over Cincinnati.
That was the Four Winds Forecast, every week with Dave Wannstedt. Experience the excitement at Four Winds Casino, New Buffalo, and South Bend. With award-winning cuisine, the latest slots, a variety of table games, and luxurious hotels. Four Winds Casino, your entertainment escape.
All right, so that's the Bears, the Jags, the Jets, and the Bengals. I'm going to do the Coach Wannstedt parlay one more time.
I like that idea. By the way, there is a game tonight. Tonight, Cowboys take on the Giants on Thursday Night Football. Pre-game coverage begins at 6:30. Kickoff is at 7:15 right here on The Score and the Odyssey app. Cowboys need a win tonight, Coach.
Cowboys will get a win tonight. Hey, the Giants, their 2 slot receivers are both out. They got the neighbor's kid, the rookie, who's a great player.
Is he good?
But the Cowboys will handle him. Cowboys win pretty good tonight.
All right, so now you got 5 if you want to do.
Yeah, there you go. What do we want to talk about? Let's do it.
Did you have something else you wanted to get to? Were you looking for something else that
I had something on my mind.
You did? I know you did. We never want you to leave here with the bag bursting, Coach.
Yes, this is what I was going to say.
Yes.
To do this running game, this is like getting into a heavyweight fight. You don't start work. What's today? Thursday?
Yes, sir.
You don't start working on the running game tomorrow when the guys come in and talk. You got to talk it. You got to walk it and you got to practice it. And you start their first day of practice Wednesday when Flus, I hope, and I'm sure he did, because he's a defensive guy. He's a tough guy. And but when you have that team meeting Wednesday, that's when you said, you know what, we're going full pads and we are getting ready for this. This is going to be an all-out bring-your-lunch-pail game. And we're starting tomorrow. Full pads, inside run. And you start building this thing Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, walk through Saturday, let them relax their minds. And boy, then you hit them in the mouth Sunday. That's how you do it.
As a old-school special teams coach, the situation with the two-minute warning, too, I thought was bizarre. Where Santos, you kind of want him to kick the ball out of the back of the end zone and not give them a chance to return it. And then the Colts stupidly don't bring the ball out of the end zone and end up giving the Bears an extra timeout.
Yeah, you wore me out. That's a double time. You know what I was thinking of? You know, my fight story. You know who Angelo Dundee is?
Yeah, he was the trainer for
Muhammad Ali.
Ali,
Sugar Ray Leonard. I had him. He lives in Miami. I think he just passed away. He started where the guys used to all train down there, the Fifth Avenue fight thing. It was the most popular boxing ring in all the country. Like you say, Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Leonard, on and on and on. And I had him come up and talk to the team when I was coaching the Dolphins, and we got talking about getting ready for a fight. And he brought up the story of Sugar Ray Leonard when he lost to Durant. Remember Durant?
Roberto Duran.
He lost to him, and then they had a rematch, okay?
No mas.
And he never went out of his room. All week long, he brought his meals in, where before he was going out with his entourage and doing the normal thing. And he walked into that ring, and he started getting ready. He told Angelo that, hey, I started getting ready for this fight too late. I want to change it. So Angelo Dundee changed his whole routine. And when they checked into the hotel like the week before, he ate in there. They watched tape. They watched videos, film, whatever they did. But it was morning till night, boxing, fight, Durant. And that was the end result. So my point was that I always think about that story, and I've used it, you know, with the teams. Hey, this is not going to be easy. We got to get ready now, not Friday or Saturday. It'll be too late. Anyway,
it's good stuff.
Stories,
it's great stuff.
Me, you know,
as per usual, Coach, we appreciate you. This was great.
Roberto Duran, I get a nice picture Angelo Dundee.
You do?
I
wish Sugar Ray took it easy on Duran. I didn't think Simon LeBond deserved that destruction myself. What, Shane? Don't shake your head.
That deserved a rim
this
shot.
This is me. You work with me. Know what you signed up for.
I'm probably, you know, half these guys don't know who are. Freddie Pacheco, the fight doctor.
Absolutely.
We used to go to fights in Miami, and he would be there.
I don't know who John Taylor is. Nick Taylor. No, I don't know these people.
Forget it. Anyway, I was trying to make an analogy.
It works, Coach.
Okay.
Make sure you check out Coach on Marquee after the game is over. NBC5 as well. Great stuff with Layla and Ruthie when you three get together and do some football. It's excellent. And thank you for always being there for us.
Hey, I'm fired up, man. This is a great team. I look forward to Thursdays again. Kip Parkins, what's he doing? Probably trying to get a coach fired somewhere.
Good luck to the Robert Saleh and the Jets. Maybe Mike McCarthy.
That's why Dave Wonstedt's my guy. When we come back, we have to talk about something surprising that continues to happen on the south side of Chicago.
They're going
to
win out.
That's next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
Win! Sox, a strike away from getting the sweep. On the ground, right side. For the third game in a row, the White Sox refuse to give in to history, and they sweep the Angels 7-0 in this three-game series.
Hasn't happened too often this year, but we will not see the bottom of the ninth, which at home is a very good thing. And what a day it was. Sox played a very good baseball game in every aspect of the game and wind up sweeping the series from the Angels. And so those people who felt they could come to the ballpark and see history, gas up the car and head to Detroit.
Wow. Wow. They are lockstep together on being upset with and mocking the fans who went out to see the loss. That would be history. I get it. Some weird dynamics at play down there at that place as they are about to have the emblematic achievement that would define the worst franchise in professional sports.
Now, the Tigers are 2.5 games up on the Twins as things start. They are sitting in the second wild card spot, but the White Sox are going there. You would imagine that the folks at the Tigers are like, here's an opportunity for us to clinch playoff spot. We are not going to allow them to mess with that. There is some symmetry and some poetry.
You think so with A.J. Hinch and Jason Benetti in the house?
Yeah, where you could have Jason Benetti calling the record-setting loss.
Oh, that comes at the hands of the manager whose signature you put out incorrectly.
Yeah, and that piece, the Jesse Rogers Buster Olney piece about the White Sox, I think it's a must-read for anyone who's a White Sox fan. Along with the Jeff Passan piece, which I think tries desperately to try and find some joy in what has been a miserable existence.
Yeah, Passan tried to find some optimism in the stuff that Chris Getz is finally apparently getting Jerry Reinsdorf to agree to.
Yeah, and I think that the baseball ops stuff with the White Sox is in a much better way than it was. The problem is that nothing's going to happen fast enough unless they're going to spend some money. And so I think that White Sox fans are a little bit doomed to this existence for a while. And you're right. It's created this weird dynamic of the fans kind of showing their displeasure by going to the ballpark and rooting against the team.
But they can't help themselves. You know, like there was like the fans that were going, and I talked to one who was on their way last night from my building, and she's like, I want to go and tell management, tell ownership just how bad they are. And that's why she was going, and like dollar hot dog night or whatever it was, dollar beer or whatever it was. But like once you're there, you know, you're kind of caught up. You can get caught up in it. Our guy Chris Tannehill was in his feelings today watching the White Sox fans actually cheer the players who just completed the sweep, even if there were fans who were going there to hope they were there for the loss and be angry at ownership. They couldn't help themselves but cheer the team, could they, Tim?
I enjoyed it. You know, they did a good job. I don't know what the crowd was today. I got the box score up here.
I think it was 11,000.
Okay. 15,000, I think.
So, yeah, it was a decent crowd for, you
know, a beautiful day.
It was a gorgeous day. And just to see these people, I don't know if that was their intention to go to the ballpark because they thought they were going to see history and sort of dwell and bask in being a White Sox fan and the negativity. But by the end of the game, it was a great game, and you saw these young players doing good things out there, and finally, you know, there's some joy on the field, it looked like. And to see these fans giving standing ovation, standing up with two outs, that was just really cool. And I don't think they can stop what's coming, but baseball is a really strange game, and I could see them going up there and sweeping and not having the record at all.
If you sweep, then there's something else in play.
Exactly. I'm not predicting it, but I'm just saying baseball's dumb that way.
Might keep the Tigers out.
You get an opportunity to make their weekend horrible.
Dude, this is what I love about baseball pennant races, by the way. The Nationals have a chance to screw things up for the Royals right now this weekend. But the White Sox have a chance to screw things up for Detroit.
And Grady Sizemore deliberately holding back Garrett Crochet until tomorrow because of competition. He said, look, the Tigers are our rivals and they're playing for something, so we're going to throw our best guy out there against them. I thought that was cool too.
Yeah. I don't want Grady Sizemore to be the next manager of this team, but I want him on the staff. I want Sergio Santos to be the next manager of this team, but Grady needs to be here. They like him.
I don't know who I want to manage the White Sox, but what I do want them to do is cast a wide net, and I want them to talk to all sorts of people to figure out where they can get better organizationally.
Why? I wish I felt like it mattered more.
You're probably right.
It's such a big picture problem, and the bus is going to take such a slow turn. It's such a wide berth. It's like, I'm just afraid. I'm afraid of how big the turn is. But I mean, the manager, it does matter. I find myself zooming out.
Your fatigue about the White Sox organizationally, I think, is emblematic of how White Sox fans feel overall. Speaks like this is. Think about the level of anger. Like the people who were at the ballpark, that was anger. There's a whole group of people like Tanny that are apathetic. They're a whole group of people of just, they pulled the chute at the end of April and said, I'm good on all of this. I am going to spend my summer doing something completely different. And they're going to need to be shown a lot of make good from the White Sox. Now, one of those things, and we'll see if it continues, one of those things is White Sox Fest coming back. Like White Sox Fest coming back in January.
Well, now that Steve Stone is back, you can bring back White Sox Fest.
Well, I mean, they had always, from what I was told, they had always planned to bring it back this coming offseason.
Good.
But they have to face their fans. It's different. It's going to be different. In a lot of years, you walk in and there's a big pile of hope. That is not the case unless they change the way that they fundamentally think about spending in an offseason. There's still a lot of work to do, but I'm with Tanny. I thought it was a really nice gesture by the fans to go, you know what? You shoved us. Like, we came here to mock you.
And you did that.
And you shoved.
And real quick.
And we appreciate that.
And watching, as Wani was on, watching what happened in Oakland today.
Same thing. Totally.
That could be my team.
Yeah. I mean, Oakland, that was a fan base that showed up to say goodbye to their ballpark and their team, who's leaving to go play in a minor league stadium next year, then going to Vegas after that. And you got a guy in Mark Kotze as the manager and the mouthpiece holding a microphone after that game in Oakland saying goodbye. Poof. Just, you know, some sad stuff. Around sports, that's for sure.
Big thanks to Dave Wanstead, who was on the show today, Jared Payton on the show today, Mark Grody, Adam Amin. We had an incredible first week, and the reason that we had an incredible first week, and we still got one more show left, but it's kind of short, is because of you, and we thank you for that.
Does Lawrence know we still have to show up tomorrow? Does he know there's still...
That's not what you said. That's not what you said in the pre-show.
Yeah, congratulations for having your first Cubs day game Friday. It's the best feeling in the world.
And it's the last one of the year.
Yeah.
That's all right. Yeah. It'll be good.
This is our first full show ever as a show today. I think we killed it.
I think we became a team today.
Yeah, we did.
We became a team for Tanny and Shane. And Speaks, I'm Lawrence. Thanks so much for the love. We appreciate it. We will talk to you tomorrow after Cubs baseball is done here on The Score.
I think we became a team today.